You're listening to the official Euro 2020 podcast in association with Qatar Airways.
Still going, sees the chance.
What a goal.
Takes the chance. Brilliant, brilliant from Insigne.
We off the ball and Spanish eyes smile. Now they stare at Wembley Stadium and who knows what beyond.
We've got our first two semi-finalists, but not without drama, Chris.
No, what a match in Munich as Italy knock out Belgium and Spain squeeze past Switzerland on penalties.
And next up in the quarterfinals, we've got this lot.
Holland's again to tee it up for Patrick Schick!
Dahlberg looks for the chance to shoot, and he takes it!
Oh, to fire it in! To Artem Dovbyk! And there's Kane! And England reach out!
Welcome along to the show presented by Qatar Airways. I'm Rob Daly and I'm joined by my regular co-host Chris Parrott. Hello, Chris.
Hello, Rob.
What brilliant drama. Belgium knocked out the competition by a brilliant Italy that were resilient and open and expansive. What great drama.
Possibly the best first half we've had the whole of Euro 2020. And it just goes to show how ruthless this competition is, right? Belgium played their part in so many great games so far. Out just like that. Romelu Lukaku out just like that. And Italy finding another way to win. We know they can do it by scoring loads of goals. And we saw in this match how they can be really, really tough to beat. And that final 20 minutes to get over the line and reach the semi-finals.
And we have our first semi-final, of course, which will be Italy versus Spain.
Again.
A rematch of a previous Euro final as well in the not-too-distant past. And it was very nervy for Spain in the end.
Yeah, went to penalties after a 1-1 draw with Switzerland. In the end, Unai Simon was the hero, Rob, from the penalty shootout, saved two. But actually, interestingly, Jan Sommer was unbelievable at the other end. And in his interview after the game, Simon said, "I shouldn't be the star of the match. It should be Jan Sommer." But but that's the way it goes, right? If you save two spot kicks, you tend to be the man in the headlines. And yeah, Spain-Italy is a Euro classic, let's be honest. Not just the final in 2012, but they met at Euro 2016 as well. Cannot wait for that one.
First, we're going to start with Belgium versus Italy. This is how this one in Munich unfolded.
Verratti back into the box. Oh, it's brilliant play! It's absolutely sensational play from Nicolò Barella. And this time, Italy do have the lead. Insigne now skips away from Tielemans. Still going. Sees the chance.
What a goal.
Takes the chance. Brilliant, brilliant from Insigne.
Stunning. Absolutely stunning goal there.
Oh, challenge there by Di Lorenzo.
Well, that's madness from Di Lorenzo.
It's a penalty. It's Lukaku against Donnarumma. 2-1. Emphatically dispatched by Romelu Lukaku. Here's De Bruyne. Oh, it's off the outside of the post. And Lukaku couldn't quite put it home. Mertens feeds it through. Picks out Chadli. Oh, it's just a little too high for Lukaku. There goes the final whistle. Italy through to the semi-finals of the Euro.
Well, on commentary there for Italy's whenever Belgium, Simon Brotherton and Andy Townsend, the former Republic of Ireland midfielder, and he joins us now. Andy, great to have you on the show.
Good to see you, Rob.
You're just catching your breath, I imagine, after a brilliant game in Germany.
Great game. I love, look, that's knockout football at its best because it's intense, it's dramatic, and of course it's always so conclusive. It's the end of the road for Belgium, which is tough on them. They gave everything. But I genuinely feel that the Italians just about deserved that. I did. I thought in first half they were exceptional.
Andy, we saw two goals of immense quality, right, from Barella and then Insigne in the first half.
We did indeed. I thought Jan Vertonghen will be disappointed with the way that he defended for the Barella goal. He tried to play his way out from inside his own area and it invited Italy to press them. They very quickly give it to Barella, who dispatched it. And Insigne was the best player on the field, I thought. I thought he was truly outstanding for his team, worked incredibly hard. And that goal was an absolute beauty. It really was, you know, and it was fitting that it was a goal like that that should separate the two, really.
You could hear it on your commentary there, you just couldn't help but
fell
out of you what a goal it was.
That's lovely. That's again, that's, you know, that look, I've been very lucky over the years. I've commentated at World Cup finals, European Championship finals, Champions League finals, but I still get genuinely excited when I see lovely football, great play. And football played with an intensity attached to it. And in knockout football, that's what you get.
Well, that opening 45, I think you were saying on commentary, for starters, just for listeners, Chiellini was back in the Italy team. They brought in Chiesa into that attack. For Belgium, yep. We were surprised Kevin De Bruyne was fit to start, no Eden Hazard. But you were talking about the tempo with which that first half was being played. Because it was, I mean, the way De Bruyne was galloping through midfield, it was breathless.
It was. I mean, certainly Belgium were just looking, when they turn the ball over, they're looking to find De Bruyne, Doku or Lukaku. Whereas Italy were pressing, they were trying to force the issue inside Belgian territory and trying to keep them penned in there and wear them down, break them down, force things. And I like that. I like that about this Italian team. I think that they believe in the way that they're trying to play. You can see that. You know, I've watched, again, lots of teams over the years where I think they're not quite committed to playing in a certain way. Yeah. Not with this Italian team. They are very much all together, and there's a real spirit in their camp. And I think right now they're probably as good an outfit as I've seen in the competition.
Andy, did we also see the other side, that, you know, that experienced old guard of Chiellini and Bonucci at the end, celebrating every block, every tackle?
Yeah, we do. That's what proper defenders do. Proper defenders, they do take great pride and pleasure in sticking their head on things and putting their body in the way and throwing themselves in and blocking shots. And they celebrate that like they've just scored a goal. Yeah. To them, it is. It's as good as scoring a goal. I think in Donnarumma, they have a tremendous goalkeeper behind them, giant of a man that looks like he's in very good form. So they were good. Bonucci and Chiellini were back to their sort of very best, their rugged best and determined best, and it was a solid performance from them.
Okay, let's cross to Rome then, because our own reporter Vieri Capretta is at the UEFA Fan Village. Vieri, thanks for coming on the show.
Ciao, everybody. Thanks for having me.
Tell us about the celebrations.
Crazy, because those final 5-10 minutes were absolutely never ending. So yes, 2-1 up, but believe me, the people here, every single Italian couldn't wait for the game to finish.
We've got some audio actually of the moment, and it features some commentary as well of the moment when Pirella scored his super opener.
C'è un contatto. Attenzione, c'è un contatto. Il pallone però è ancora per Verratti. C'è sempre Immobile a terra. Ma c'è gol di Niccolò Barella. 1-0. 1-0.
Andy, your commentary was great, but it's nice to hear in Italian as well, isn't it?
Yeah, it's great.
Vieri, I mean, what was it like? People throwing their drinks? What was going on at that moment? Brilliant goal. Brilliant goal.
Yeah, no, obviously, people throwing their drinks. Everyone abiding to the rules. Let's not forget that. I want to say that. But everyone going crazy, because it wasn't an easy first half, I think. So going in front and then 2-0 up. I think what can be said is that perhaps we said many times that Italy didn't face the best sides. Well, they did tonight, and from the first half straight away, scoring goals, playing magnificent football. What a night, really.
Vieri, you've been making us jealous throughout Euro 2020 with all your pictures of Rome, and there was an amazing sunset right just before the match kicked off. It from an Italian perspective, it turned into a pretty perfect night by the sounds of things.
Absolutely. Well, having everyone singing the national anthem, and you know how Italians enjoy singing the national anthem. Yeah, absolutely. Because as I said, I wouldn't say Italy were, you know, I think Belgium could have been favourites despite the injuries. They're a fantastic side. But Italy in the end managed to play the same game we saw against the other sides. And obviously the fans were waiting for a night like this for about, you know, a decade, perhaps. And I mean, it was unbelievable. And let me tell you, I don't think anyone can stop Italy now.
Before we let you go, do you think the Italians believe now? Was that the performance where everyone truly believed they can win it?
Absolutely. As I said, Italy have a great record of matches unbeaten, but they needed to face the best of the best. And Belgium is studded with stars. Italy were, I think, played brilliant football. It wasn't just, you know, winning, which is the most important thing, but how they did it. As you said, really solid at the back. All-style defending. But at one point, I saw Verratti, Jorginho passing the ball around. I thought it was Xavi and Iniesta. You know what I mean? It was that good. It was that good. And everyone here absolutely loved it. The only sad moment was when Spinazzola, you know, had to go off injured. Everyone here in the fan zone clapping. He was crying. That's the only sad moment of the night. Mm. But other than that, it's a big, big celebration in Rome.
Yeah, Vieri, I was just going to say about Spinazzola, because he's such a powerful player. So how much will that affect the dynamic of the Italian team in the game against Spain?
It's difficult to tell because he was that kind of added striker, marauding forward on the left, and he did it throughout. And so I think even tactically, Mancini might have to change a bit. I did mention the other times we were talking about how good Spinazzola was, that his only problem is that he's a bit injury prone. Mm. I did also say that in a short tournament, it might not be a problem. And, you know, he's unfortunate, but we're hoping that he's back on Tuesday for the semi-final, but it really didn't look like it. So I think Mancini might change a few things around. Emerson will probably start in place. But this kind of left-back Spinazzola we've seen in the past games is incredible.
Vieri, thank you very much for coming on, and enjoy the rest of the evening in Italy. I'm sure it's a good one.
Thank you very much.
Look, they're clearly confident now, Andy, with good reason, you know. From Belgium's point of view, they did get back into it before half-time with a penalty. Mm-hmm. And a needless challenge, probably, from Di Lorenzo. Although Doku, wasn't he excellent throughout?
Very good. Very dangerous tonight, Jeremy Doku. Every time they got the ball to his feet and he set Di Lorenzo up to run at him, he looked like he could worry him and cause him problems. I actually thought Di Lorenzo stuck at the task quite well, but that was a poor decision, that one right on half-time, where he just nudged him in the back and quite rightly the referee gave the penalty. And then Belgium are back in the game. But Doku was their most dangerous player. Kevin De Bruyne didn't look quite right. He had flashes and he had moments, but he didn't look quite right. And of course, when you normally they would have Eden Hazard as well.
Yeah.
Adding another problem in that area, and they didn't have that. And they kind of missed that, I felt, a little bit. In the end, they looked very dangerous, Belgium, when they had Mertens there coming on. And, of course, then they had Chadli, and he had to go off pretty much within a few minutes. So it was a difficult night for Belgium in many respects. But no, I think had they have had Hazard, a fit Hazard and a confident Hazard, as well as a fit De Bruyne, then that may well have proved the difference.
I want someone to look at me the way that Chiellini looks at a teammate who blocks something on the line. Just brilliant throughout. So Italy march on after a superb win over Belgium. They'll take on Spain in the semi-finals, but it took them 120 minutes plus penalties to beat a very strong and resilient Swiss side.
Too much on it for Laporte. Hammered through the crowd, though, by Jordi Alba. And via a very kind or cruel deflection, Spain have a prompt lead. And here is Foyler, and there's Shaqiri, and Switzerland are level. Gerard Shaqiri, bearer of the Swiss armband, with a moment of potential Swiss salvation. Red card. Michael Oliver has dipped straight into his pocket and dismissed Foyler. The end of 120 playing minutes. It is Switzerland 1, Spain 1. A penalty shootout is imminent. Ruben Vargas has hoofed it high. Oyarzabal, and Spanish eyes smile. They were peering into the abyss. Now they stare at Wembley Stadium and who knows what beyond.
So they managed to get the job done. Spain march on to set up that semi-final with Italy. Andy, you're across that game too. What were your thoughts?
Again, I've enjoyed watching Spain because, again, I think that's a team that wants to, that's an energetic team, wants to get it forward, wants to get it into their key players at the top of the field. They don't delay, they don't dwell too much on the ball, I think. And so I like watching them play. But Switzerland have shown great heart, great spirit, great togetherness. And it's amazing. If you have that, if you have those qualities in your team, it can carry you a long way. If you don't have it, and I'm not saying the French don't have it, but there are signs in the French camp, and we're hearing things from the French camp that maybe all's not quite as peaceful in there as we perceive. So if you don't have that togetherness, if you're not absolutely all really pulling for each other, that shows too. And I think the Swiss team have excelled in togetherness, a collective desire to try and stay in matches, to win games. And they've actually had a very good tournament. And they'll rightly go back home and they'll hold their heads very high. And they know that they've given everything.
It does feel like the teams that, where the players all seem to really like each other. Where
Correct.
You can, like, I'm thinking Denmark, England, Italy. Yeah. They're the ones that are doing well.
They're doing very well. You can see in those teams that there is a genuine connection between the group and the players trust the coach. implicitly, and I feel that's very important. Look, I played in World Cups for Republic of Ireland under Jack Charlton, and we had that so much.
Yeah.
And it's amazing that once you get on a bit of a roll, you start to feel that, and you really start to feel unbreakable. And I'm sensing that, certainly in the Italian team. Last 10 minutes, how they hung in there today. And I've seen Denmark, after what was such a dramatic, obviously, opening day for all the wrong reasons with Christian Eriksen, for them, now they've started to grow into the tournament. And they've got this kind of belief and this feeling in their camp, I'm sure, that it's not going to end yet.
Yeah, we're going to get on to the other quarterfinals later on in the show as well. Well, when Spain beat Croatia in the round of 16, we spoke to the former Spain midfielder, Gaizka Mendieta, and he joins us again now. Hello, Gaizka.
Hello.
Now, the last time we had you on, I started by asking if you felt relieved. Is that the case again after that penalty went over the Swiss?
No, I'm still recovering.
Unbelievable
drama.
Still
recovering.
Yeah.
It is, although it seems to be the way this tournament, but... I guess when it's on your team, it's tough to digest. Of course, very happy they made it through, winning semifinals. But an incredible game. You have to give credit to Switzerland, the way they played before the 10 men and then after with 10 men, very, very well organized, never losing the composure, the tactical sort of system. And yeah, I mean, Spain... I mean, I think he played well first half, started quite well, controlling the goal. But still, I mean, I don't want to get too much into detail because I think the important thing is now is semifinals. I'll leave the analysis for Luis Enrique. But yeah, I think it's important to get through, of course, a lot of drama. And what it matters is just to get through to the next round.
Guys, on penalties, my parents are Irish, and the saddest I've ever seen my dad is 2002 at the World Cup when you scored the winning penalty in the shootout. I'll pass on your apologies. And you had a great penalty record in La Liga. You barely missed any penalties there. You scored in a Champions League final and in a shootout as well. Can you tell us a little bit about what would have been going through the Spain players' mind today? Because it was the missed penalties for both teams. What is it like to actually take a penalty with the world? I mean, you must know the world is watching you at that time.
They might, but you should not be thinking about that, because then you're in trouble. If you're really thinking about who's watching, the consequences of it, no, it's actually the opposite. It's about you on your own, the ball, whatever you do to put the ball in the penalty spot, whatever wrong, walk, and just literally focusing on what you're going to do with having no doubt whatsoever in your head of you're going to miss, because then is when you're in trouble. And for a lot of players I know that take penalties, that's kind of the best thing you can have, the confidence of, okay, I'm going to score, I'm going to put it here. I think Busquets in particular was a bit unlucky because he kind of faked it, sort of stopped it. And then he kind of, the pass went a bit wider. But it was with good technique. But then goalkeepers, I think they were brilliant. But yeah, mostly it's be confident. Don't think about anything, just on the penalty. Because if you start thinking about, okay, we missed five, or am I going to miss? I'm not going to miss. It's not the right mental approach for a penalty shootout.
Me and Chris were loving watching Pedri again. Ah. And I know we spoke about Pedri the last time you were on the show. But what did you like about, what parts of the Spain performance did you like and find encouraging going into the semi-finals?
No, I like, again, that trio in midfield. I think it works really well.
Yeah.
Like, of course, you could tell they were a bit tired in the end because they played the extra time and they run a lot and they cover a lot of ground. But I like how they literally compensate defense and attacking. I think Ferran Torres was very good as well, very active. Morata, again, like working really hard. Maybe with Pedri, when he's up there, I think that's what Pedri does well, like breaks lines with passes, with runs, with the ball, without the ball, mostly with the ball. And that's the thing what we need from him in this game, is when you have two banks of four, you need players like him that you try to with the quality and the ability to get through those spaces, which we did maybe more in the second half.
And from Spain's point of view now, they head to London for the semi-finals. Of course, they're two wins away from being European champions again. Do you think this group of players now will really believe that they can go all the way at Euro 2020?
Yeah, I think so, definitely. It's all up there to be taken. Of course, still a long way. Could be either Italy or Belgium, two really strong teams. that again, it will. I don't think they will be as kind when they get the chances, like Lukaku, you can see Insigne or Barella or Locatelli, whoever gets there, they're really taking their chances. So I think again, defensively, we really need to improve a little bit. But definitely is there, and you have to take the positives and keep building up for the next game.
Guys, it's been great to get your insight. Thanks so much for coming on the show.
Thank you, guys. Thanks.
Former Spain midfielder Gaizka Mendieta, great to get his insight on the show tonight. Chris Parrott, me, Rob Daly, and the former Ireland midfielder Andy Townsend. Let's get the thoughts of the Swiss goalkeeper Jan Sommer next, who spoke to us after the match.
It's not easy after a game like this, but I'm really proud on this team. As well today, we were 10 against 11, good squad of Spain. So extremely proud, and congratulations to Spain. We knew that that it will be complicated against this team, Spain, and yeah, we tried to stay in the game and as well mentally, and we were good inside, and they had no big chances in the first half. So we came back, and it's really sad in the end that we couldn't do it.
Well, he had his day against the French, of course. Xhaka suspended for the game. Brel Embolo went off injured. It made things very difficult for Switzerland. But Jan Sommer will be one of those names, I suppose, like Spinazzola and these guys who've just had this amazing few weeks.
Yes. Yeah. Now, again, he's done very well. And as I mentioned, I think that whenever you have to say goodbye to a tournament, Rob, and you're on your way home, I think as long as you honestly can look yourself in the mirror and say that you've given everything you've got,
yeah,
and that you did everything you could to try and keep going and to try and win. And I don't think there's anybody in the Swiss camp that won't say that. I think they all did very well. Coming into the tournament, I saw them as maybe a team that's going to maybe just get out of the groups or have it difficult to get out of the group. So for them to go out in the manner that they have today against the team that they've gone out to, having enjoyed, you know, a massive, massive victory against the French, then I think they've done themselves proud, I do.
Certainly have. Lindsay Hooper has been at the UEFA Football Village in London and has been speaking to fans from both sides.
I'm with Paolo. It's very, very tense. The penalty shootout it went to, but Spain are through.
Yeah, it is very, very stressing, but we really deserve to win. We ended up showing what we really deserve, which is buzzing and winning this tournament, which we will surely do.
I'm with Zahal, who's a Switzerland fan. You've had your flag wrapped around your shoulders throughout that match. Very tense one for you to watch.
Oh my God, my stop. My heart completely stopped. I cannot even talk right now. I'm shaking. It was so much pressure, but I'm still so proud of them. So, so proud of them. They've come a very long way. And I'm a Swiss. I was born there. And seeing them here is just like so much pride. And I'm so happy for Spain. At least we beat France. That's all we wanted.
Such great emotion you could hear in the background there. And of course, Italy and Spain are now heading to London to meet each other at Wembley. And this is the latest meeting between these two nations. Of course, Euro 2012 final, Spain winning 4-0. And actually in that game, Sergio Busquets and Giorgio Chiellini both played, both very likely to play at Wembley. And they last met in 2017 in a World Cup qualifier when Spain won. Andy, this is really going to be one for the football purists, right? Spain against Italy. What a fixture.
It's a great fixture in prospect. It really is. I mentioned all the qualities that Italy have. And I think Spain also have shown it was tough for them today. It wasn't easy. They got over the line, the penalty shootout. I didn't know what was going to go on every time someone walked up to take one. I had no idea and what was going to happen, but they got through it. And, you know, you get through an afternoon like that, you get through a game like that, and it fills you with tons of optimism and belief that, you know, you start saying to yourself, maybe this is going to be our time. Maybe this is our tournament. Maybe things are dropping and moving for us. And so that's going to be an awesome game. That's going to be a fantastic game to watch.
Spain winning that 3-1 on penalties in the shootout. Next, we're going to look ahead to the other two quarterfinals.
You're listening to the official Euro 2020 podcast in association with Qatar Airways.
Hashtag Euroshow to get in touch on Facebook, Instagram and Twitter. Loads of you have been with your favourite celebrations from the tournament. Anshaw has gone for the Swiss fan who was pictured nearly crying and then moments later had his shirt off. That guy who's gone viral. Cyber's gone for Attila Fuyola's jump celebration for Hungary when he jumped over to that woman who was pitchside on a desk and scared the life of her. Keep your suggestions coming in. Hashtag Euroshow. Andy, can you think of your favourite, any big wild celebrations that you've particularly enjoyed?
There have been lots. It was a big moment for England when Raheem Sterling scored his first one. You know, it's nice to see the relief on players' faces that are under a little bit of pressure to produce, but there's always been some great celebrations and there's going to be more. There's going to be lots more to come and they're going to be even more significant. So I mean, Insigne's celebration tonight was great. You know, he's run 30 yards to curl one beyond Thibaut Courtois and immediately turn around, run straight to the bench and everyone's piling in after him. You know, that's what you played a game for. Those moments, that's what it's all about for players. It's just living in that sort of moment because they don't come along that often, you know.
Certainly don't. Okay, Chris, we might see some celebratory moments in our other two quarterfinals. What are they?
Yeah, well, I mean, we definitely will. And it's this is at this stage of the tournament having the quarterfinals done over just 2 days, I think really adds to the intrigue. Mm. So here we go. 6 p.m. CEST, the Czech Republic against Denmark in Baku. I wonder how many people thought those two would be meeting in the last day of Euro 2020 when things kicked off 3 weeks ago. And then the late game and therefore the final quarterfinal is in Rome, 9 p.m. Central European Summer Time on Saturday. England against Ukraine.
Okay, well, let's start with that one. Both sides played last Tuesday, and it was a day of history and drama.
And he tries to pick the far side. Alexander Zinchenko now. Oh, to fire it in! To Artem Dovbyk, who surely sends Ukraine into the quarterfinals!
And there's Jack Grealish, and here's Luke Shaw, and there for England is number 10 again, Raheem Sterling! And there's Kane! And England reach out! A vast national embrace! Harry Kane at last! England, modern England, writes their own new history.
Some great moments there for both England and Ukraine. And look, it sounds obvious off the back of wins, Andy Townsend, to say there'll be in great spirits going into it. But I think the manner and the stature of the two wins, particularly for Ukraine and England, means they'll be in very high mood going into this game.
They certainly will. I think for Ukraine, again, they're now in that, they're at that point in the tournament where they're playing for fun. And what I mean by that is they're pressure-free. Whatever they do from here on in is absolute bonus territory. Now, they will want to carry on. They will want to try and beat England and keep going to the semi-finals. But if they don't, they've had a good tournament. As for England, I still think there's another gear to find. That was a very difficult game against Germany. It was such a tough one to call. Key moments, Thomas Muller misses, Jordan Pickford makes a couple of big saves and all of a sudden Sterling scores, Kane scores and it's done. But it was very, very close. So that's going to be a good game. I'm expecting England to win it, but it's the first time now they've had to travel. It's in Rome. There won't be those ton of England fans behind them roaring them on. So that's a slightly different dynamic, but one that I still think they will overcome and win.
This is an England side, remember, yet to concede a goal so far. They're the only side at Euro who can boast that. We'll hear from Jordan Pickford, as Andy mentioned, in a moment. But first, here's defender John Stones talking about the England goalkeeper.
Pick sees everything, obviously, from the angle that he has on the pitch. And me and Pick have got a great relationship and are able to have those hard conversations, I suppose, when you're on the pitch. And it's what's needed in football is... is you to be able to take that bit of criticism or pass that information on to someone that he can't do, and I think he does it so well, and obviously you can see how he lives the game and fights within the game and shows his expression. He's very emotional and something definitely that I love about him.
This is Timo Werner, blotted out by Jordan Pickford.
Yeah, for me it's very good and it's really nice, but it's not just me, you know, it's a full 11 and everyone's working hard to keep them clean sheets because, you know, tournament football, clean sheets are key, and it just gives us a basis of, keeping clean sheets will keep us progressing and give the lads up front the opportunity to go and score goals.
Hit by Havertz and turned over athletically by Jordan Bickford.
That's a sensational save.
We could go the whole way and win this without conceding be more history, but you know, we've got a tough opponent coming up next and that's the main focus. I know they've got quality and have scored some great goals in the previous games, so it's about us doing our homework and training hard on the pitch while we've got the chance. And as I said, that clean sheet mentality and winning mentality has got to keep having that snowball effect and keep growing and growing and, you know, as I say, see where it takes us.
John Stones and Jordan Pickford there. Andy, another key member for England at the back is Harry Maguire. Mm. Just how vital do you think was it that he was able to come back? And I know he didn't start the first game at Euro 2020, but get back fit after that injury he had at Manchester United and be available for this tournament.
Yeah, I think it is crucial. Certainly Tyrone Mings didn't let anybody down and of course has his own attributes. But I do think Harry Maguire with John Stones and if need be with a third centre-half, I do think that's England's strongest combination. Harry Maguire is... he's not the most authoritative of leaders. He's not a Tony Adams that will come and grab someone and rattle the shirt.
Or a Chiellini even. Yeah,
or
yeah,
even
yeah.
a Chiellini like that. He does it in a kind of understated sort of manner. Mm. He likes to lead by example, I think, Harry. And usually he does. We live in an era now where players are criticised for... And people pick holes in every performance. You can't escape it. You can't get away from it. You just have to accept it. Harry Maguire's had a fair bit of that in his time at Manchester United, but I still think he's one of England's two best central defenders, and I think he should play.
We're going to hear from Gareth Southgate in a moment, but first we're going to get you to play England manager.
Okay. Andy.
So Bukayo Saka, there's a knock, isn't there, Chris? He picked up in training.
Yeah, so which I think he's going to be assessed, but apart from that, Gareth Southgate has said that everyone is available. So I guess, again, the question comes back to, you know, does Mason Mount play?
Yeah,
does Phil Foden play?
Yeah.
Three at the back.
What do you reckon, Andy?
I think... in this game, I think Gareth will play a back four. And I think he'd like to reintroduce Grealish or Foden. I think he can. But Mason Mount, he trusts. Mason Mount has considered himself very unlucky to not be available for the last game. So it would not surprise me at all if Gareth puts Mason Mount back in there because he has great energy, great willingness to get up and down the field. And then use a Foden or a Grealish at the right time as the game starts to stretch and starts more space becomes available with that last 30 minutes. I would imagine it will be going down that sort of road. So I would think Maguire, Stones, Walker, Shaw,
yep.
Calvin Phillips, Declan Rice with Mount. And I think probably...
It's Kane Sterling and then...
Kane Sterling. Yeah. And if Bukayo Saka doesn't play... Does he go with the outright pace of a Marcus Rashford, or does he start with maybe Phil Foden to start then?
Well, let's hear from the man who's got to make that decision, Gareth Southgate, on Ukraine.
We know that Ukraine are a good side. I've been really impressed with what Andre's done with them. They had a couple of sticky results through the autumn, through the Nations League, but you know they've bounced back and they got a very good result in France in the World Cup qualifiers. And again this week against Sweden. So if we give them space to play, they'll play, and they've got some dangerous forwards. So we know how focused we've got to be, but also we've got to make sure we get our game right and we're posing the sorts of questions that we can and make sure that we take confidence from what we've done and take that next step.
Gareth Southgate speaking about Ukraine there. For more on Ukraine, let's head to Rome again. Bogdan Buga is our Ukraine reporter for Euro 2020. Thanks for coming on the programme.
Hello, everyone.
So, talk to us about how big this game is for Ukraine. It's their first ever quarterfinals at a Euro and only their second ever quarterfinal at a major international tournament. Is this one of the biggest games in the history of Ukraine?
For sure. I think it's... one of the two biggest games, because the last quarterfinal in 2006 in Germany was very, very special. Ukraine playing against Italy, they lost to eventual champions. So I hope this time it will be different.
It's been a very special few days, I imagine, as well, for Artem Dovbyk, who got the winner. How well known was he before the tournament, Bogdan, and has he become something of a superstar after his winning goal?
Well, yeah, the guy is living through a fairy tale. He wasn't supposed to be here. He was included in the squad only because of the injury of Junior Moraes, the Shakhtar Donetsk striker. Then he came on as a substitute only because of a few injuries in the Ukraine's team. And it happened so that he scored this goal, and now he's a real national hero. There is so much noise about him. TV shows, you know, websites, newspapers, interviews with his parents, who are very shy people living in a small town. So I think he's really in a fairy tale now.
Lovely story that, Bogdan. Can you talk to us about the reaction in Ukraine since that win in Glasgow? I imagine the country must have been celebrating for some time.
Yeah, it was a long, long night in Ukraine. I know that people in Kyiv and in many other cities, maybe in all cities, were gathering on the streets, like, celebrating the whole night, shouting, singing with the national flags. Yeah, it was a quite unexpected success for Ukraine, given their performances in the group stage. That's why the happiness and the joy is even bigger in our country.
Now, I heard Andrei Shevchenko say after the win against Sweden, Ukraine are not scared of England. Do you think he really means that? Or do you think he will be slightly nervous about some of the players he's going to have to come up against?
Well, I think the biggest advantage for Ukraine now is that they don't feel and they don't have any pressure on them. Ukraine should be relaxed. For them, quarterfinal is a huge success. So they can play their football. They can choose how to play defensively, or maybe try to play with England on, like, not only on counterattacks, but their usual possession style. So their hands are free, and this is a very big advantage for them. I don't think they are scared. I think they are motivated, and I think they are eager to show themselves against such a big opponent.
But when the game starts and you might reach a semi-final, Bogdan, you must be feeling nervous too, Bogdan.
Yeah, I am. Because to tell the truth, the quarterfinal, I thought that quarterfinal is something quite unbelievable. But the semi-final, it will be just boom.
Bogdan, score prediction, please.
I was very close against Sweden. I said that it will be 1-1 and Ukraine winning penalties. So just 1 minute from this prediction.
That was very close.
But this time, I love Ukraine. I support Ukraine, but I think it's 2-0 for England.
Bogdan.
I know. What did you think he was going to go for the Ukraine win?
I thought you were going to go extra time and penalty win again, Bogdan.
Look,
just keep it simple.
We won't tell Andrei Shevchenko you said that.
No, I won't.
Bogdan, thanks for coming on.
Okay, guys.
UEFA's Bogdan Buga in with the Ukraine team. Andy, we got a prediction of Bogdan there.
Yeah.
What are you feeling for this one? You said an England win. Anything more specific to that?
Well, I've actually been saying at home, funnily enough, I was talking to my wife, and because obviously Gareth's a friend of mine, we were together at Villa,
of course,
for a good few years, and he was actually my room partner for a while, so I'm good friends with Gareth, and I actually said I fancy that they'll roll Ukraine over 3-0, and I'm now, of course, because it's in Rome, and I'm not sure how hot it's going to be there, but it usually is this time of the year. That can have a little bit of an effect, that can slow the game down a little bit, but I think if England get off to a bright start and score early, I think they'll win this one comfortably, I do. I think Ukraine have done great, but I think England can dominate this game.
You must be delighted for him and what he's done in the last few years.
Yeah, I mean, again, it doesn't surprise me because he's a very measured and calculated guy. He doesn't put anything to chance. He doesn't leave anything to chance. He's not someone who's, you know, spinning a card every 5 minutes.
Yeah.
And he likes to think hard and seriously about what he does. And I think, again, I think if you get your preparation right, if you connect with your players, if they trust you and if they believe you and you're genuine, then I think you've got every chance with talented players. And Garrus is pretty much about as genuine a guy as you could find. He really is.
Well, before Ukraine, England, it is the Czech Republic versus Denmark in Baku. It's being billed as the battle of the underdogs, but both teams had impressive victories in the round of 16.
Deep this time from Barak. Kalas wins it! Kalas with the goal!
Damsgaard leaving it for Dolberg, looks for the chance to shoot, and he takes it. Williams away, straight at the feet of Dolberg. My goodness me, it was on the plate for the Dane. Could get worse for Wales here. And Myla makes it three to cap an outstanding performance. And the goal has been given. There is a fourth goal for Denmark, a goal for Martin Brathwaite. And Denmark's wonderful story is going to continue at this European Championship.
It is an extraordinary story for them. We'll get the thoughts of their head coach, Kasper Hjulmand, shortly, and goalkeeper Kasper Schmeichel. They've both been looking ahead to this match.
For us, it's most important is to focus on ourselves, and we do, like you say, have the flexibility to play different systems, and then we just have to adapt in the middle of the game and see what they come with, and then I'm sure that we'll be able to change around if we need to. We defend from the front, very solid, very difficult to break down. We have great team spirit. I think that's been shown, you know, over the last 4 weeks, very, very clearly. You know, we have the backing of a great country that's, you know, been showing us so much love, and yeah, we're just excited to get going.
We face a team who is very, very competitive with great players, with Patrick Schick as one of the most promising, talented strikers out there. First and foremost, I think it's two teams who shows that football is systemic. It's a team sport, and they will give everything. And also a lot of quality on the individual players. It's a great football game. I think it's two very competitive teams who deserve to be where they are. And we will show a great match tomorrow. I'm very sure of it.
Well, for more on Denmark, we can head to Copenhagen and our reporter, Sture Sandø. Hi there, Sture.
Thank you for having me once more.
What's the atmosphere in Denmark like ahead of this game, Sture? Is it, I guess, for most of this tournament, Denmark have just been able to, not a free hit, but enjoy their football after what happened to Christian Eriksen. But now, is there a sense of pressure on this team going into this match with the Czech Republic?
Oh, that's hard to say. I don't think that the pressure is coming from the fans or from the Danes in general. I think actually in this case, the pressure is on. It's mostly comes from within the players. As you say, it's been quite like a free hit since the first match. And now everybody is just happy that we get to, have another crazy Saturday night with football here in Denmark. And everybody is gathering for viewing parties or private smaller parties and stuff like that. And I think right now the biggest worry is whether the sun will keep shining or it will be rainy, because if it's going to rain like it has today here in Denmark, it's not going to be as fun as last Saturday.
Well, it certainly seems it isn't going to be raining in Baku. From what we've been reading, it's going to be very hot. Do you think it's going to affect the way that Denmark play, because they've been playing with such great intensity, particularly in their last two games?
Yeah, I definitely think Hjulmand also pointed that out, that the temperatures would affect the way they will play and how they can play. Of course, that's also why I'm excited to see if that will be reflected in the way he decides his lineup.
I've seen quotes from Yusuf Poulsen saying that he's okay to play. Do you think he'll come back into the team given how well Kasper Dolberg did in his place in Amsterdam in the last round?
Whether he's in the starting 11. Oh, hi.
Sture, it sounds like you have a helper in the background.
I definitely have.
It's probably worth explaining to the listeners who that is, Sture.
That's my two-year-old daughter, Sonja. Sonja, can you see Denmark?
Denmark.
She's cheering for the boys.
Does she know what's happening? Is she watching the football with the family?
Not watching so much. More like running around and yelling.
Yeah, that's basically been a football fan,
has
I think.
Has she been allowed to stay up for the game, Sture?
I'm working, so I haven't been home when Denmark have been playing, but when they have the early matches at 6 o'clock Danish time, she's been up watching with her grandparents.
It's great to know all the family are getting involved, of course. And look, we wanted to ask you about celebrations as well, because we've been talking about the best celebrations that we've seen at Euro 2020 so far. And when I think of that, I immediately think of your final group game and those amazing scenes. Do you think that's been the standout celebratory moment for Denmark so far?
Yes, it definitely has. Everybody in Denmark knows about the 92 team and have seen the celebrations, but there hasn't really been an occasion to celebrate like that on a national team level since. It has just been crazy, especially last Saturday. It was the streets were blocked, so the buses just had to stop and let people off and then see if they could start driving again in a couple of hours and stuff like that. I've never experienced anything like it. It was completely crazy.
Well, story expectations, you know, going into this Czech Republic game are very good. It feels like an evenly matched quarterfinal, potential semi against either Ukraine or England. What is your score prediction?
Oh, I have to be positive, and I am, of course, but I'm not as confident as I was heading into the round of 16. I think Denmark will win 2-1, but yeah, it's going to be even. It's going to be very even, I think.
We can't wait for this one. Sture, appreciate you coming on.
Of course, and I will join you again for another preview if it's needed. I hope so.
Go back to fatherhood.
I will do that. Thank you.
Two jobs in one from Sture Sander there, our Denmark reporter. Andy Townsend with us to the end here with Chris Parrott and myself, Rob Daly. Okay, Andy, your thoughts on the Czechs going into this one?
Yes, I like them again. A team that's based their success so far in having a good discipline, a good shape, and being very difficult to break down. Of course, there's familiar faces in there. There's guys that we know all about, the Suchecks and the Sufals, of course. Patrick Schick has scored some very good goals, I thought. I mean, look, the goal he scored against Scotland, obviously, is one that we'll all remember very much. But I've just enjoyed watching his all-round game. I think he moves well, he gets into good positions, and he looks like the sort of boy at the moment that's having a tournament where he can finish. So, they're not going to be easy to play against. I think it's a very difficult game to call, this one. And it's, again, going to be another... It wouldn't surprise me if this one goes to extra time. It really wouldn't. It's going to be very, very tight. I just fancy the Danes ever so slightly. And again, Denmark's been an incredible story so far, and they'll be hoping it continues.
Not much in that game at all. Andy, it's been a pleasure. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you, Rob. Cheers.
Chris, thanks for your company too.
Thank you, Rob.
Remember to listen to the Euro Show live every match night on the official app or on Euro2020.com. You can also subscribe to the official podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your shows. We'll be back with our live show on Saturday night to react to the Czech Republic versus Denmark and Ukraine versus England from Rome, and the podcast will be released shortly afterwards. Thank you very much for joining us as always. But the next time you join us, we'll have our semi-final lineup complete. From me, Rob Daly, Chris Parrott, and Andy Townsend, it's goodbye.
Thanks for listening to the official Euro 2020 podcast in association with Qatar Airways.